Podcast. Join us from inside the design studios for conversations about presentation design, strategies, tips and tricks, running a design studio, and more, all for presentation designers, managers, and presenters. Here are your hosts, Troy Collar, Nolan Hames, and Sandra Johnson.
Hi, I'm Troy Collar from TLC Creative Services based in Southern California.
Hey, and I'm Lori Collar, also from TLC, sitting in for Sandra Johnson, who is on holiday in Scotland and England this week.
And I'm Nolan Hames from Nolan Hames Creative in Montclair, New Jersey, where it is fall and leaves are falling.
Wow. So what's happening? Well, you've got the seasons. We're in San Diego, so we still have the one season of the year that we have. It's still going. And Nolan, what's happening in business world, though?
Oh, for you? Lots of different stuff. More InDesign work. More clients asking for 508 compliance stuff. Still mostly on the print side. It's a process of learning, but getting kind of interested in it. And learning more about it day by day because I have to.
Implementing, learning, billing. Yeah. Let's hear. We actually have several corporate PowerPoint templates in the various stages of design and development. We just did a very cool interactive touchscreen app, all authored in PowerPoint, no less, that was used at a large conference last week. We just got a video from their trade show area to show us it in use, which was very cool. I just wrapped up a corporate event that, in addition to managing the client 16x9 presentations, we are tasked with developing what I'll call virtual sets for each segment. So we had a front wall that was 80 feet wide. It was an LED wall. And then we had two side smaller walls. They were only 30 feet wide. It was fun. So we got to design all these things. So each segment, it was a very high level executive meeting and it was very globally themed. So for that, we developed these just super wide screens of London, Tokyo, San Francisco. It was in Phoenix, so I developed a couple for Phoenix. And during the walk-in, there would just be huge imagery. You guys familiar with Cinemagraphs? We talked about those before.
Yeah. You make some?
So we did. We developed Cinemagraphs. They were just nice. 80 feet wide. It was really cool. 80 feet wide and, I don't know, 14 feet tall. So like we had Camelback Mountain, which is, I can put a video of that one because it's one of the few unbranded ones. Mm-hmm. I'll put one on the show notes. But so you'd have this giant picture of Camelback Mountain and then we dropped out the sky behind it and I put in this just really cool cloud roll happening behind it. And everything was also like you're supposed to be in an office building. So when you look at the video, you'll notice it looks like you're on an upper level of a business tower looking out through the window. So I designed all these virtual building sets for all of them. It was fun.
Cool. How did you author the Cinemagraphs?
That was done, well, Photoshop worked for all the static imagery, pulled it all into Premiere in a very custom setup. And then Premiere has a little bit of an issue with exporting. Actually, I should just say Adobe has a little bit of an issue with exporting. They have a limit of somewhere in the 8,000 pixel wide range, or it's actually 8,150 pixels or something, but in any dimension. So it can either be wide or tall. And our wall was almost 9,500 pixels wide. So you do this little hack. This should go into my pro and tech tips for anybody that does video. Nothing to do with PowerPoint. You actually author it in Premiere. You get it all set. You close it. You open up Adobe After Effects, which has a different limitation. It has a 16,000 pixel limitation. You import the Premiere project and then you can render it from there. So you're basically literally doing the exact same render. You just have to use a different program that wasn't designed with limitations. So it's a multi-step. And then we mock them all up in PowerPoint for the review because the PowerPoint machines didn't have the pixel count, but we mocked them up so we can go through them really quick. And then the clients also had low res versions so they could go through them because we designed dozens of these for the client committees to sign off on the, you know, few that were selected. It was fun.
Nice.
It looked awesome.
Yeah, it was. Thank you. Lori, what's happening in your studio? Because you were at the studio, I wasn't.
That's true. I am scrambling to get as many projects wrapped up and handed off. because I am slowly transitioning into complete wedding mode. Our daughter gets married a week from tomorrow. So I'm impressed I'm here right now, actually. I have flowers on the brain and seating charts. But our design team is just doing a great job of taking care of almost all of our project work. And but I did. I had another speaking engagement this week. I'm starting to join the circuit, I think.
I missed it. I was very excited to hear about this.
Yeah, I went to our local high school for their career day. And now it was a bait and switch. I was told I'll be in a room with a handful of kids and they're going to just ask questions. And I find out the night before that, oh, no, you're in the auditorium and, you know, you've got a screen to use and it's going to be full. And you're doing this three times to three groups of kids. So I threw together a presentation with the help of our design team and had a great time. Even had some kids come up and talk to me afterwards. So it was pretty cool.
Cool. So what's happening in the world in terms of news?
In the world of presentation news, have you guys, this has affected Lori because we're on the same team. I don't know if this has affected you, Nolan, but if you use OneNote 2016, like the actual real version, not the Windows version. We talked about this before, but I think Microsoft is accelerating their timeline. We've been hit by the deprecation of OneNote 2016.
So what does that mean?
Well, in a recent round of updates, and you know what? I'm actually not sure if it was Office updates or Windows updates, but it uninstalls OneNote 2016. No warning, no delay, nothing. It just suddenly is gone. Now, I should note, Microsoft quoted in an article we talked about a couple of months ago. Here's the quote. Microsoft isn't going to push users to switch to the Windows 10 version of OneNote when updates to Office are installed. It will first check to see if 2016 is present, and if so, it will leave it be. Well, in my experience, across about a dozen computers on two different Office 365 subscriptions here at our studio, I will say it was removed without warning on every single one of them. It took some hunting, but our IT manager has the download, the URL to download the standalone OneNote 2016 installer. Mm-hmm. It basically restores everything because your data isn't lost because OneNote, it's just a window to a cloud data. So if it's uninstalled from your computer, it's not like you lost anything. You just lost the access to it. I will put the download link in the show notes because it's just a pain to find it. Microsoft is really, really making it difficult. In other words, they're trying to encourage people to get rid of it. And I've talked to now two people that have already said what they're doing to switch out. They're basically leaving OneNote behind. One of them was a fairly large corporate client. They're like, we can't deal with this. We've made an ecosystem. We've made an ecosystem around OneNote for, you know, our corporate life. And if Microsoft can't support it, we're not going to, you know, we're going to something more stable. And the other one was a small independent who just said, that's it. I'm just switching to Evernote. I'm going that route. So that's a news thing. Doesn't have to do with presentations, but we keep all of our notes about presentation projects in OneNote. So it affects our presentation life. Mm-hmm. What about you, Nolan? Anything?
Yeah, there are a few things. Transparency settings have arrived on the PC in PowerPoint.
For pictures, right?
Yeah. So you can always make shapes, you know, transparent. You can make text transparent. But now you can make, if you insert a photo, there's a slider now to make that transparent. But what's weird is that I thought you guys had this for years because this has been on the Mac for years and years and years. And I just assumed, you know, I guess I'd never done it on the PC. I just assumed that it had come to the PC at some point, but I didn't realize you were still under that handicap of not being able to do that.
Nope. It's also this is another thing that's pulling closer. It's been in Keynote since it was introduced. So what, 11 years ago, Keynote had it and PowerPoint just added it.
So the workaround that apparently PC guys had to do previously was to put it, was to fill a rectangle with an image and then apply the transparency, but no longer. Another small thing that came to Mac and PC, when you copy cells now from Excel, so you're actually copying a table or a series of cells, you can actually paste them in an embedded way, just like a chart. You've always been able to do this, but you used to have to go to paste special and insert it as a Microsoft Work object. So not everybody knew that. But now when you go to paste, you get your little pop-up and one of your options, you have an additional option now. Instead, you know, it always said, keep the format, apply formatting. But now one of your options is to embed on the PC. That's the terminology on the PC. And on the Mac, it's called Excel table. So when you paste it in, you now have these extra options. So you can basically embed the table so you can get things like sparklines and conditional formatting and lots of other items that don't normally come over. It functions as a photo basically because you can squish it. It basically renders it. But if you ever need, to edit it, all you do is right click and open it up. So
really? Again,
so it works like an embedded chart.
All right. Well, I guess it's kind of like conference season here. So we're all coming off a fantastic presentation summit. Well, that got me thinking and been getting some emails. So I thought I'd just give a list of conferences that at least we're looking at attending. We've been for the last several years, I've attended the San Diego AIGAY conference. So that's coming up next year, March 8th through 9th in San Diego. But then we're looking at attending the National AIGA conference because this year it's in LA. It's in Pasadena, April 4th through 6th. And finally, have never attended a HAL conference, but am trying to do it every year. And it's in Chicago this year, one of my favorite cities on the planet. And that is May 7th through 10th. So we'll see which ones we actually get to go to with our scheduling. But those are ones that certainly have got my eye for sure.
Okay, as way of introducing this great conversation we're going to listen to, it was previously recorded. It was recorded at the 2018 Presentation Summit, where Nolan and I gathered a group of international presentation designers to talk about PowerPoint, what they see in presentation use, what they see in presentation design, and lots of other random topics. It was great because of time zones, we would have an almost impossible time getting this group of people together. So enjoy our international PowerPoint Perspectives conversation. Okay, Nolan, first recording of the presentation summit. We've gathered a great group of folks around us. It's going to be fun because we have actually no agenda outside the fact that you and I are the only two from the States.
That's right. I have no idea what we're about to talk about, but fortunately we have people who can talk for us.
So PowerPoint from the International View.
Correct.
At least that's what we're going with as a title for now. Okay. So with that, let's start here. Please introduce yourself, kind sir, with the funny accent.
You're going to have to keep saying that.
Hello, g'day. I'm Glenn Miller from down under in Australia. I live in Brisbane, work in local government, and have used PowerPoint a lot over the years, including coming over here. I think I've been to the United States about 10 times to not only bring some stuff over about what we do, but learn from a bunch of other people.
Fantastic. Why don't we start, right there.
My name's Tom Howell. I'm from Synapsys Creative. I've been working across a whole series of places around the world, freelanced through London, worked throughout India, Singapore, and now based in Sydney, Australia with some of my team.
Name of company, we should just go with that.
Synapsys Creative.
And let's go to, you brought a few folks with you, yes, add to the international.
Hello, my name is Mark. I'm originally from Brazil, but I live in Sydney, Australia. I work with Synapsys, with Tom. I'm a senior designer, and I've been working with PowerPoint like for a little while, actually, not that long, but fantastic. Bringing design to PowerPoint.
Hi, my name is Sam. I also work with Tom at Synapsys Creative. I studied design at university and then fell into the presentation design industry, and I'm still in it.
Fantastic. And your university was where?
University of Technology, Sydney.
Sydney. Okay. Fantastic.
I think all somebody of us trying fall into it. I think that's it.
Yeah. Presentation design. I don't know anybody that's actively pursued it. It's just, a niche. And introduce yourself, please. Yeah. Kind.
So Chantal Bessé, I'm from Quebec, Canada, near Montreal. I have my own business. It's Chabas for presentations, visual communications. Yes, I kind of fell into it too because scientific background, instructional design in the corporate world. So I've been using PowerPoint since PowerPoint 95. And the work I do mostly, yes, I do presentation structure, design, messaging, and presentation coaching for TEDx people.
Fantastic. Ah, yes, then they are very cool. You the TEDx Montreal, yes?
I haven't done TEDx Montreal yet. Oh. I've done TEDx Quebec City.
Okay.
But I'm not attached to a specific event now. I do coaching for anyone that wants to do a TEDx event.
Chantal, do you want to plug your own podcast?
Ooh. I could, yes. You're nice. My own podcast is Women in Public Speaking, really trying to empower and inspire women to take the stage.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Okay, so open question here. Norman, let's you and I ask this one to each other first. What do you see most here in the States, 4x3 or 16x9, widescreen or standard aspect ratio?
I would honestly these days about half and half, but it's moving to 16:9, okay. I think, depending on sort of how progressive maybe the organization is. I do, in talking with people, some people are just, we're used to 4:3 and that's what we're doing. It's like, all right, can't be convinced. What about you?
I'm going to say 16:9 is my standard. The only 4x3s I see are in medical. Still a lot of doctors and medical device. I think it's mainly because they're entrenched and they have this whole library of stuff and they don't want to take the time to convert it, or it's a bigger effort. But then for me, even 16:9 is the minority. I'm usually doing what we call ultra wide, anything wider than 16:9. So Glenn, because you're in government, this will be great. What do you see mostly in use in Australia from your perspective, 4x3 or 16:9?
16:9. And okay. I think a lot of that is depends on your IT department, how they set up the software, what version you're using. If you open it up in a 16:9, it's easier to use it that way than convert it to anything else. But where I work, existing well and truly, almost 100%, 16:9.
We see the exact same. And I actually think it's an Australia thing. I think this is the first international difference that we're noticing is I think the industry in Australia is a lot newer. I don't think there's a longer steeped history of presentation design. Whereas, Troy, you said medical. Yes, we have medical, but nowhere near the amount of sheer volume that has been happening for decades in the US. So I think it is an age of industry thing that we're slightly newer in the industry. Australia as a whole is slightly newer to it and a slightly smaller industry. So I think we're a bit more agile as well.
Interesting. Hadn't thought about it from that perspective.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Chantal, what about you?
It's
so you're representing all of Canada here, but we'll just go with more Quebec and
both,
the
both French and English.
Yeah, I must say medical stuff, I do agree that we see a lot of 4x3. For some of them, I have the feeling it's because they still print their damn slides. Because most people that are, some of them are just used to them. Mm-hmm. And that's when I try to move them to more modern-looking presentations. But I would say a half and half, because I'm still working with people that have been used with our old ways of doing things.
What about like all that weird A4? You guys got weird paper sizes and things like that.
You mean the entire world except for America?
Yeah, exactly.
Yes,
everywhere.
Yeah. We use crazy things like centimeters and really odd
too.
Yeah, really odd systems like A4.
You'll have to explain how that works.
One day I'll go through it with you.
But Tom, when I'm up in, I do a lot of work in Canada or a fair amount, when I'm with certain automotives, you have to do kilometers per mile when you're measuring out when you're in the auto industry. I'm like, wait, a mile is... Kilometers per mile is a thing we have to list on our slides because that's how they measure to get a comparison to the US, but it's still like a whole different number system. I don't get it. I'm like, hey, I was around in the 70s. We tried that whole conversion thing. We said, forget it. The rest of the world went on.
No, it's only 1.6. 1.6 is your lucky number between miles and kilometers.
Yeah, but
so we ran out, and I don't know how US letter works, nor do I know how the US system of measurement works, nor do I think half of people in the around the world. But we actually measured our paper system on our metric system.
Yeah.
So an A0 piece of paper is 1 meter squared. And then from there, an A1 is half of that, and an A2 is half of that, and A3 is half of that, and A4 is half of that.
That actually makes sense. So but 4:3 fits fairly decently on an 8.5 by 11 sheet. How does 4:3 fit on A4?
Not very well.
Okay. Exactly.
But a 16 by 9 fits very well.
Oh. Yeah. So that may be the reason.
That might be part of it as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, because 16:9 doesn't print very well.
A4 versus US letter. A4 is just a little bit narrower and a little bit taller, which puts it more of a widescreen aspect ratio. Probably very interesting. Animation. Is animation utilized, transitions, morph could be in there, and just animation in general. Do you see presenters actually building their content, or is it just more like a splash page? Every slide is just displayed all at once.
Yeah, I think it depends on where you are. There's still a move to build a presentation that you can also print so that people in a corporate setting can see it on their iPad and flick through it. And animations to them are a bit of a nuisance because there's junk on the slide that they can't print. And there are workarounds for that. Animations to me are not just the way to show things, but they're the way to hide things. They help you build up a story. And I think that they're so important that we've got to continue to educate people to use them.
I think that's the part I want to go to, but let's hear about some other ones. Animation is, let's skip over here. Do you, TED Talks are very animated or kind of slide by slide content?
Mostly slide by slide for the people I work with for one reason. I just didn't want them to mess up their talk, forgetting about an animation. Or if there was an animation, it was automatic to make sure they wouldn't forget about it. But basically, yeah. But basically for other clients, it's either some of them are just going wild with anything and everything because they think it's cool. But I also get a lot of people, they don't use it enough because they don't know how to use it. So it's an education thing also, like Glenn mentioned.
Okay, I'm going to come right back to that point in just a second. What are you seeing? Because you're more of an agency. You're pricing a pretty diverse amount of presenters and requests and so forth. Is animation a big part of it? Is it just good design?
We don't see much animation coming in, but plenty of animation going out. So we see plenty of animation leaving the studio because we do a lot of animation and we build that in, but we don't see a lot of existing decks that come to us already with extensive animation.
And a lot of what you do is
I can relate to that.
Animated. I mean, it's you use PowerPoint like a video editor.
Yeah, we do create native videos based in PowerPoint, but also storytelling with animation in PowerPoint as part of a deck is a really sort of key part.
See, that could actually be an advantage because for us, we get legacy files. You know, they're going to take a slide from here and a slide from here and out of this deck, I want to pull this one. And they have all these random animations that do not cohesively go together, especially with the new use of morph. Suddenly things that used to move don't move because they don't have the elements on the previous slide.
Yeah.
So my favorite tool has been one of the add-ins that just literally in one button removes all animation for the presentation so we can start fresh. Like, okay, let's just scrap it all.
And make that it can be hard when there's existing click animations in there. And when we do get an animated deck that comes in, we have to actually list out every single click because
the presenters
we can't tell if they're expecting to click and then surprise people with this amazing statement or not.
But that's my point, is that we know that these are all kind of Frankenstein presentations. They've been pulling it. So the presenters, we're assuming, do not know that there are clicks on it. So we're just starting from a baseline of nothing. And we're going to build it up and say, tell us what doesn't work or what does work in general.
I always ask clients how they prefer to present because some people don't like animation. Some people get really freaked out about it, and other people are like, oh, no, I really want my bullets to, you know, well, whatever they might be to appear or I like. So, but historically, in the last few years, I've been pulling animation way back. And I feel and so often I'll see somebody else's presentation or deck with really nice animation, and it sort of like reminds me, oh, you can do this really well. So it's just personally, I feel like I should get back into it a little bit. But
okay, so here's my big point. This started with Glenn and everybody else kind of reiterated it. And maybe we'll have Sam and Mark kind of give us their perspective. Storytelling. To me, animation is all about storytelling. It helps build and guide the audience through the message that's being given. It could be a financial talk, and we're going to lead them through the financial statement by showing them just the key elements or highlighting the key elements and instead of just a big mass of numbers up there. Or it could be a keynote address where we're going to lead them through it. So we utilize animation very purposefully as part of the story itself. It really leads it to it. I'll just say I was in another country that speaks Spanish and, you know, in Spain. It was like flat, 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 and they just really couldn't actually grasp the idea of animation in the reviews until we went through it. It was very, very interesting to see how they didn't trust it. They just wanted to see the whole thing and talk through it. Do you two, Sam and Mark, when you're building, I'm sorry, hold on, Sam, what was your position? What are you design?
Yes.
Yes. That was a very one word answer. So as you're developing presentations, again, in a place other than the US, I'm assuming you're not US clients, otherwise the storyline will not work at all. But are you using animation to build a story to help the presenter lead the audience through things? Or are you just kind of making sure that everything looks very nice and professional? It's all up there for them to talk to and present to.
I think like the animation is just a tool to tell the story. You know, like if you overdo it, it's just going to make wrong things or like show the wrong impression and people are not going to understand what is supposed to pay attention of. You know what I mean?
Okay.
So it can be distractive. So
that's a big thing I see is that animation done wrong, as you were saying, Chantel, yes, becomes a distraction. It has to be kind of purposeful. Sam, do you use animation throughout presentation design?
Or I do my best to.
Now, do you focus on slide animation, perhaps on click, so all on one slide, or are you building it across slides using transitions or more for other ways of building the animation sequentially so you can see it as Glenn so aptly said, to flick. Is it flick? To flick through a PowerPoint. Sorry, it's not a term I would use here in the States. Swipe. You'd swipe through a presentation, PDF on a...
Only if you're on a tablet.
Yeah. Well, as we said, yes, on an iPad. Oh, okay. On, yeah, an iPad. Anyways, so would you be building it like on slide? You know, everything's in animated elements on one slide, or would you build it across slides?
That depends on the purpose. So as mentioned earlier, if the client insists that they must print or have everything on one slide, I'll do my best to design and thinking about how to animate it all so it stays on one slide. But preference would be, especially if the context is that they're presenting and they really want to get a message across, I would use as many slides as necessary to get that message across, as well as to really make it clear to them how the story will unfold. And if they still insist to print, then I would insist to make another copy of the presentation.
Yeah. That's a good
because point. And usually, and yeah, I, this is not for everybody, but it has happened in the past where sometimes where you sort of animate it really well and say, this is for your presentation. They get really excited and they say, okay, we'll also have the print version. And then that's adding more to your business.
Was it Keynote or was it did PowerPoint used to have a print animation, mm-hmm, thing? Yeah. Did they get rid of that?
I believe so. Think it's gone. Yeah. Okay. It used to do a printout for, if you had four clicks, it actually printed each you four pages, which was
but yeah, that's, I was just reminded of that. That's been gone for a while.
I haven't used it in a long time. I had to check.
But sometimes it's easy just to duplicate the slide, have the end result, and just hide it. That's what's used for printing. That's it.
I think the whole trick with PowerPoint animating is knowing what your story is, because your story, absolutely, determines what should move. And in some cases, it should be shown, but in other cases, it shouldn't be hidden. So the pragmatic level of animating is to work through your story and say, well, what things need to move, mm-hmm, and where should they be and how long should they stay there? And then the artistic level is at which to say, okay, well, now as a designer, I've got a bit of liberty to say, well, it can fly in at a certain speed versus fade versus move out, and you can actually make it pretty through your animations. So that's the practical and the pragmatic and the artistic level. Then the other thing is the type of presentation you're delivering. So if I get up and talk in front of someone, I don't want anything to distract from me. So I might bring stuff in at certain times and keep telling the story. And if you really want to emphasize something, you can say, and then what we learned from this trial was, click and look at the screen and stop, and everybody looks up there, and that's where you get your big engaging moment. So if you're presenting over the internet, you can't point to things.
Exactly.
And so you need a lot of emphasis information to be able to say, okay, everybody look there, because that's what I'm talking about. Now look over here, versus being a live presenter.
In animation terms, I think that's classified as staging. So yes. That's staging a slide, and using methods like progressive disclosure is basically using those elements of traditional animation design to be able to elicit the right. Yeah. The right attention points and where your attention points are. Yeah. At first cut of any animation that we produce, we always first track what the audience is going to be looking at, and then we track the peripheral stuff. Hmm. So there's peripheral stuff that can be moving softly or moving in time. to be able to enhance the overall aesthetic, but the primary purpose is to watch what the audience will be watching. So whatever distracts you from that needs to go.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Has Morph changed the way you guys animate?
It made my life so much easier in some instances.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, it's fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
I'd agree. Mm. I'd agree with you on that.
We've almost completely through add-ins replicated Morph on slide. And that's deliberate, and it's always about backwards compatibility for us because we work with such a wide variety of clients on a wide variety of systems, and you never really know. I think my knowledge is correct. In the 2016 release of PowerPoint, Perpetual doesn't have Morph, I believe.
It does not.
The Perpetual does not.
Does not. So as soon as 2 years ago, no Morph. Whereas the Office 365 licenses do always have it, and they will always update and release. So it's very hard to use a feature that, if you have a product as modern in Microsoft terms as 2 years ago, will not use that feature. You just can't animate with it.
Well, the first question I always ask is, what version are you using? Because I need to know. That's how I will be planning your content, what I can and cannot do. When I know it, I'll be able to reduce my design time because I have so many cool tools in the latest versions. But if it's not compatible, then okay, I'll do it the old way.
And this is an international thing, because people are going to say I'm using PowerPoint 2016. And as you just pointed out, Tom, 2016 Perpetual is different than PowerPoint 2016 Office 365, which can still be different than PowerPoint Office 365
on the Mac,
or actually with the monthly builds, the beta versions, if you will.
And then there's a desktop version.
Yeah, and the mobile.
We discovered the other day that can be completely
out of
date.
Yeah, the whole, what was the name of
it?
The bridge?
Bridge, it's the app. They call it an app. They call
My head's
going to
explode
everything.
If we talk about
okay.
apps right now. All right, guys. Do you only use PowerPoint, or are you using Keynote, Prezi, other software, and if yes or no, what do you feel about that?
I'm almost 100% PowerPoint, because some people that were using or insisted on using Prezi, when they realized that it wasn't always working for them, they went back to PowerPoint. And my client base so far hasn't been using Keynote, so I focus mostly on PowerPoint most of the time.
Uh-huh.
Well, working many years with Mac, and of course, like I use Sketch, which is kind of similar to PowerPoint as well. But the difference is, like, instead of using slides, they use artboards.
Yes.
So you can have like different size of artboards, you know, and tell the story in a different way as well.
Well, you export each one then, because the Sketch, you're going to create artboards, but then you have to export them as probably JPEGs.
Yes.
And where are you posting those in? Just a PDF then?
Yeah, usually okay. Yes.
So you're presenting using a PDF.
Or sometimes, like when there is interaction, I export and publish in Vision.
Okay, so you use the HTML5 portion of it.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah. So when presenting to the client can interact and have an idea how it's going to work, and you go from there.
Oh, so you're making more mock-ups, UI mock-ups at that point? Or?
Yes.
That's right. Oh, yeah, very cool. Correct.
How about Google Slides? I've been getting more and more requests for those, but I really am not fond of them.
You know how I had to work with it? They were using PowerPoint, but everything was hosted on Google. So they opened it in Slide, kept complaining that, oh, that thing is so off. What did you do? And then I kept asking, where did you open the file? So that's my experience with Google
and
Slide.
There's that new thing, which maybe we'll talk about later. What is it? Salesforce just had a new software,
I read
right?
something.
Oh, Quip, something like that. Yeah, yeah. They're creating a new, oh, or they did create a new
slide base software, but yeah, with Salesforce.
There's a new one every few months. Anyway.
What other topics can we go for?
What are most of your clients in your home countries, or do you have international and U.S. clients? You know, those people that use like letter size paper. Or do you?
We have a number of international clients, mostly Europe-based and some Southeast Asian-based countries. I know Sam has experienced working with quite a few Chinese clients as well. Not with Synapsis Creative, but I know in her previous roles, she's been working with a lot with Chinese-based clients.
So one thing I've heard, just to be on the Asian side, I haven't really done too much work for Asian clients, but I did years ago work on something, and I was given advice that Asian audiences like to see more content than US and European audiences, that they like to see more content on the slide. They want you to prove everything. Does that ring true, or are there have you seen differences in sort of Asian audiences and what they want to see on slides?
Without actually being fluent in reading Chinese, I can design the slides, but you get the sense mainly because it's cultural in the system, such that because their boss told them to put everything aside, they would, and it's hierarchy upon hierarchy. So once you get to us as the designer, it will take a long time to get the answer. So you just design. As you pointed out, usually they are quite messy with many, many slides. Sometimes you can split slides, and when you ask them, or you do it without asking them, and they don't really notice. there is a tendency for, I think I see two sides. You have either the slide decks or the design that's cluttered and full of everything, because everything must be accounted for in there. And then you have the other side, which is the opposite side spectrum, which is it's quite bare. They wanted everything very clean.
They're probably following Gar Reynolds a lot because he's in Japan. So he's trying to change the trends or something. I don't know.
Definitely in Japanese presentations. I mean, universities are embracing a lot of what.
Well, Japan has just a different design aesthetic than the rest of
Japan
Asia.
And that's Singapore
true.
Would
yeah,
be a
which
great,
is, which is a very
a great group to have at this table, but they're not. Yeah. So we're going to talk.
What about so? Tom and Mark, you've worked in South America and Europe a lot and Africa. Have you noticed any differences between, you know, South American clients or audiences and, you know, European audiences?
I did some consulting to a firm in India, international firm, but they're one of the Indian centers. So a lot of consultancies and accounting firms and things like that do a lot of work and utilize sort of production bases in India because the cost is very low. And they were having some problems with how the quality that was being produced. And it generally came down to a design ethos. And it's not just the ethos, it's how the culture permeates an ethos. So something like, and potentially, I haven't done the research, but potentially this is similar in China. The way even people live day to day, someone's personal bubble affects how they elicit white space on a slide. So if your personal bubble is really tight and you're used to getting on a train with 6 million people shoulder to shoulder, and I'm not saying shoulder to shoulder, I'm saying someone's shoulders are on your shoulders and then someone's on your shoulders on top of that. If that's your personal bubble, then the way you see information is about condensing it all together and being really tight. So I saw a lot of really tight designs and I elicited questions and sort of said, why did you put that image there? And the answer was, because there was space.
Okay.
Because space is seen as a negative. It's seen as, and not negative space, yeah. It's seen as a non-positive thing.
Yeah.
So the culture, and this may very well be true with China and the populations of China and things like that, but the way people sort of live permeates the way they design, whereas the Western ethos is all about having space. If you go to someone's house and it's a massive house, that's a good thing. Whereas I think in other cultures, if you go to someone's house and it's an organized house, that's a good thing. And so the values we put on how we sort of live and our cultures actually permeate our designs completely.
That's fascinating. I love that perspective on it. And I'm probably going to get in trouble by saying this, but I've noticed looking at some things that have come out of India and Pakistan specifically and, you know, sort of that area, that I've always felt that just historically they didn't have a design. They might be very good technically, but just they don't have a sort of history of design the way. Like, it's not embedded in the culture. And again, I'm not commenting on their culture or art or anything like that. But from, like, a graphic design, there doesn't seem to be a history of that. And that, to me, kind of just is evident.
There's a lot of great graphic designers in India. I think what really sort of stemmed, especially in PowerPoint particularly, PowerPoint got picked up as a business process outsource service. And it's just not. So it was picked up by all the consultancies. There's been consultancies using designers in India and Pakistan and Sri Lanka for well over a decade now. and they're not using them for design. They're using them as a business process outsourcing, which means
presentation process.
There needs to be a process to design. And so the process is the font right? Is the image okay?
Quality the technicalities.
Wise? It's all just technical. So you may be seeing a lot of that, and that, and they, that wasn't a small movement. There's tens of thousands of people in those jobs in India.
No, you're right. And so maybe the new generation that had been trained by the older McKinsey outsourced or whatever.
I'm not naming names.
Yeah. Well, I just did. Or Ernst & Young or, so, you know, there's a lot out there. But yeah, so maybe they're being taught that, okay, PowerPoint presentation is just formatting and is just, you know, consistency.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The visual rules are, the visual cues for how you put together content is very different. We have a couple of outsourcing, I should say we have a couple of outsourced resources that are based in India, and we mainly rely on them for the technical, you know, the hundreds of medical charts. Technically, recreated perfect. Hand over the whole deck and say, make this fit here, this and that. We still, the rules are applied, but they're not the way we would appreciate them or want them, so we still have to go through and repurpose those. So we don't rely on our resources, and we 100% trust the individuals that we use with our content, but not from the design perspective, just from the technical aspects, and it falls right in line with what you're saying. So it's perfect.
And I think India gets a lot of shit for that, for the not good design. But I truly believe in their culture, it is good design. True. And so what they're doing is correct. It's just not correct for you. And that's not their problem, sort of. It is just a difference. I think there's some brilliant designers and graphics teams in India that do some amazing stuff.
Mark, what about South America?
It kind of sounds the same as India, you know, like a lot of people trying to squeeze all the information in a small space, and all the clients, they do that, and they want to see value for their money. So I need to put more information here, you know.
That's a good way to
value for money is something that I've seen before. It's like
I'm not everything.
Yeah, I'm not paying you to put one word in a picture on a slide. I want to see.
So Nolan, let's carry on this conversation and see who agrees or disagrees.
I just want to say I lived in Manhattan for a long time. I was crunched on that subway, and I still got some negative space on my slides.
No, those subways. I was just out visiting you, and the crowded subway was nothing compared to the crowded subways in Asia. Okay. It was. Yeah, that was something I had never experienced until recently. So here's my point. From what Mark said, value for money, I find that we have a high value, or maybe a better way to say this, is we get to bill a lot for taking this massive amount of information, reinterpreting it down to here's the key call out, and here's a visual, maybe it's a photo, maybe it's a diagram. How do we synthesize this down to a very specific or succinct on-screen element to support the talk? Whereas what Mark is saying, we got to put it all on there because the value is the fact that we made it all fit. So I think we get paid value to not just simply make it all fit, but to actually interpret and make it a visualization.
Yeah, well, it also depends in how a client approaches you. If they're approaching you to help with the communication and the storytelling, or if they're approaching you as a graphic designer to make it look pretty, if it's the latter, then removing things is bad. They want to see, like, I deal with this with process graphics, which are, you know, I guess you can call infographics all the time.
Quick interruption. Say that word.
What word?
What was it, Nolan?
Process graphics. Oh.
How would you say that?
Process graphics.
Process.
Yeah.
How would you say it?
Process.
Oh, process. Canada.
Process.
Oh, the room is split.
I don't know why.
I work with Americans a lot.
I say process.
He's been hanging out with
I don't know where I picked it up from, and I get grief for it all the time. Like, where are you from?
Oh, you're with us.
I don't know. They just
where did I come from? I don't know.
It's one of amongst friends.
That and my mom.
Yeah.
So anyways, okay. So back to what you're saying.
I find that a lot with process graphics. It's sometimes the clients will, you know, give you all the written material and say, you know, condense this into a graphic, which you'll do, and then you'll remove things and whatever and get something very simple. But then they show it to somebody else in the organization, and they're like, but this is too simple. Where's the design? We came to you for graphic design. And I'm almost at the point of like never accepting another job like that again, because it's
part of the problem is that we have to teach people to pay for the outcome. So when you have a haircut, you don't get paid for how much gets taken off. You get paid for what it looks like when you walk out the door. And with PowerPoint, we've got to teach people that sometimes information is evil and text is evil and simplicity is beautiful. And if you can tell a story in a simple way, and in my own presentations, I feel so sorry for corporate people who have to deal with text, because I think the text is evil because people look at it, they read it, they get distracted. If you can tell a story in a simple way and have a live person there presenting it, you're so much better off.
I'm a little surprised with, let's get into a larger conversation, but as social media and just interpersonal communications and all that stuff has gotten, and media has reduced the number of words dramatically, you know, Twitter and all that's like, that has significantly, and people are into it. People are like, no, I don't want to read a lot. I want to read a little. Presentations, we're still getting, so it's like all the words that used to be in a message or a memo that have gotten down to 140 characters have now, you know, been pushed into the slide.
Fantastic. But even in a sort of question answer sort of scenario, if I said to you, Glenn, tell me about koalas, you wouldn't say grey, furry. you would go to a long extent to tell me everything you know. And I think when people put together
that's
a presentation,
about as much as I know as an American. Grey, furry, and cuddly.
Tell me a third thing, we'll have learned something.
You would go to every extent to try and put as much information as you can into telling me something.
And it's a natural thing, but
it's a very natural desire.
What I need to do is talk to you and say, well, why do you want to know about koalas? Is it because you're interested that you want to take a photo of them, or you want to develop a vaccine for them, or what do you actually want to do?
And I think that's the natural interaction between, because basically anyone that puts together a presentation, someone at some point has said, tell me about this, or you've decided I need to tell people about this.
Yeah, so I think that's more the important. It's I need to communicate this.
I'm going to put everything I know about it and everything I can tell you, absolutely everything.
But then we have to go back to the basic questions. I always ask them, if I were to ask you, what are the three things they need to remember? That's usually when you get a blank stare.
Wallet, keys, and phone.
But as soon as they start that process, they usually start to think, okay, maybe I should clear up my message. And then the thing...
Maybe I should ask my boss exactly what this means.
Your boss. But, you know, one thing I do realize, though, packing slides usually comes with people that fear public speaking. They are afraid they will forget something.
So it's got to be on the slide.
It's going to be on the slide. But you know what? As soon as they go through the process of learning, okay, just have the triggers in there that will help you discuss your points. They realize that they don't fear public speaking as much because we're only humans. If you have text on your slides, you're going to look backwards to your screen. You're going to freak out because you forgot a sentence. You're going to freak out because you forgot a bullet point or whatever. The less you put in, the more comfortable you get. So that's the whole point. And that's the teaching I'm trying to do with my client base, because I don't know, probably it's because I went through that before myself, but I get a lot of people that tell me, I'm freaking out, I'm scared to death. But going through the process, when they go very clear, a lot of white space, not many things on slides, and dividing slides, as soon as they don't pass out when I tell them that the number of slides has been tripled, and they get to work with it, They do a great job.
Oh, so. This is a great question.
Yeah.
Do you find, and I've battled this. I think Nolan and I, we've talked about this. A lot of times the edict is you have 15 minutes and no more than 20 slides. So do you agree?
That's a thing where, you know, it's a big trend where with people just saying you have 5 slides to present to me. And of course they take an hour's worth of material.
Which ruins the whole idea of morph, which takes up 3 times as many slides. do you find a slide count is usually one of the rules, I'll just say?
We have found it with some European clients, and we've just flat out said, well, we're not going to do that. And people go, oh, okay. And it is, it's all about the content. It's about the depth of content that you've got.
Absolutely.
And I literally said, well, we could just copy 20 slides and make them all into one slide and put a trigger on every, put a click on every single one. And then you've got one slide and you can go tell everyone, I've got
a
one slide presentation.
That once.
Yeah.
Oh, I've seen it more than a few times.
Putting triggers and stuff like that. So they would still have the slide count, but it was all animated.
It's impossible to edit unless you know how to use a selection pane. Even there, it's not fun. But they're meeting a rule. It's really a talk time. So,
but no, nobody ever says, oh, I need this graphic design done. I need this brochure done. And you've got 15 art boards to do it in.
Well, they say you've got 15 pages.
Yeah, absolutely. But if you need to go more, you just go more.
But how does that convert to metric, Nolan?
Exactly. 15, right, 15 pages
of
metric
like
is
6 cubic gallons,
18 and a half. Yeah.
So using PowerPoint, are we finding that it's I should probably back this up and say when I started with PowerPoint, basically because people wanted to see things that look professional. Let's just go with that. So I've always used PowerPoint as everything that it can do. It can be a presentation tool. It can be a video authoring tool. It can be a content authoring tool. And more recently, it can be a document authoring tool.
Absolutely.
A lot of financials are using PowerPoint documents. So they're actually authoring things that are never made to go to screen. They're made to go to print, usually a PDF document, I'll just say. So are you finding internationally that PowerPoint is still viewed as a presentation app, or is it being utilized for other elements, other things? Like we just did one with an admin where they don't have a video editor on their computer because it's a corporate supplied thing. They were amazed that they could create videos, and suddenly they're making all their own videos in PowerPoint, authoring their own videos, which I think is pretty, it's amazing. It's not efficient, but it's what they using the tools they have. So do you find people using PowerPoint for more than just presentation?
Yes.
Like such as?
Well, print, and as you mentioned, videos, because I know there are some students who, without having access to, say, Adobe products or without knowledge of any other things, they have PowerPoint, and everyone knows how to use PowerPoint. And I think also PowerPoint, the actual interface for video is quite straightforward.
It is.
Yeah. Maybe a little too simplistic if you're used to a nonlinear editor.
I agree with you, but
you can throw lower thirds on a video in PowerPoint really simply and easily. Mm-hmm. And I would challenge anyone, if you had, let's say, an hour of talking head footage that you wanted to clip into 15 short clips, I would challenge anyone in Premiere to run 15 short clips with a lower thirds introduction of the person, the brand, to be able to do it faster than in PowerPoint.
Very true.
That's a good point.
Yeah, that's very good.
And all the features, I find they are user-friendly most of the time. So it's empowering regular people that don't have all the fancy tools, or sometimes they're not allowed to have more budget for software, and they're able to do more. And I'm all for it. Usually I try to use PowerPoint for most of the tasks just to prove to them, yeah, look, you can do it yourself. I'm not going to charge you to change a damn word or a comma or whatever. You can do it, and yet you can produce it afterwards. So it's a good way to help people.
Sometimes I see people, I need to do a timeline. Oh, Jesus, shame I don't have Visio. And I say, look, Visio is awesome. But you know what? You can do that in PowerPoint, or you can set it up as though you're going to print, or you can set it up with animations, or you can do video, or you can do this. So for goodness sake, use the program you've got. And the very fact that you can have layers so that you can move things over on top of each other and you can produce a video makes it much more powerful than the other Office apps, particularly Word. Excel's great. We use it all the time. We use GIS and a lot of those visualization programs. PowerPoint seems to be the tabletop on which we put things so that we can display them to people or that we can print them to people. There are new tools such as the 3D stuff, and I look at it and I think, oh, okay, this is, some of the content you can bring in is not great. You have professional people who produce that content versus the home owner who needs to design it. But what we need to understand is PowerPoint now has the capability. So whether it's hard or it's good or it's great or whatever, the fact that you can now do that in PowerPoint is awesome. After that, then it's a case of, okay, well, how are we going to do this?
Content library and development is definitely...
I would love a content library.
Big. So, oh, I just had a thought and it disappeared because you said 3D. By the way, 3D is one of my talks here at the summit.
Yeah, I can't wait. I'm very excited
because half it's technical and the other half is, no, here's how to actually use it for real slides. It's not just a gimmick. It's just not a gimmick that you pull out at Christmas
time. Are you whipping out the Hubble and the dinosaur?
Oh, yeah.
I suspect I'm going to come and see the thing and then think, oh my goodness, I need to change my
talk. Oh, no, because everything Glenn does is like way over the top. I think it's just because Glenn's isolated from the rest of the world that he has to invent his own process.
I don't know what's normal.
don't diss the Hubble sample. I spoke to a group of astronomers last month and I just wanted to say, hey, there's the, 3D, what, I don't want to spend a lot of time on it. I used the Hubble.
And they were wowed by it, I'm assuming?
It was appropriate.
Well, exactly.
That's it.
What about interaction design and UI design?
Relative to PowerPoint, I'll
stay quiet on that because we actually do a lot of it. But again, that's a carryover from years ago where I would do application mockups before it was even a named thing because we were doing, Flash. Actually, I was mainly doing Director interfaces for what would be an actual software package. So we just continued that. Everybody knows that we do it, or a lot of our clients do. We've continued it. So we use PowerPoint as a mock-up interface, much like you'd use SketchUp. PowerPoint's great. And we then, my process is we'll actually develop it all. We'll get them to sign off on the visuals. Then we'll give them an animated version that kind of walks them through, letting them see in a video format, here's what we're thinking of for the interactions on this before you go to code. And then the last thing we'll do is we'll actually give them the PowerPoint and say, please name all those buttons that you said are wrong. And they get to type in all the actual content. Simplifies the design, the iterations, because now they have control of it. We get it back, and then it gets turned over to the code team. I think it's beautiful.
Are you finding in the US more people are asking for interactive presentations for sales pitches and things like that?
We're in the process of finishing one right now that's very large and elaborate, but I don't think it's as commonplace.
Not so much. I mean, it's just the work that I happen to do. I don't do a ton. Although, I mean, I'll do interactive things occasionally, but not for like sales.
What was Africa.
Oh, Africa. Oh, yeah. I did a whole like map thing where having to go back to custom shows and, they really want, it was interesting. They first came to me and they wanted the sort of interactive map so that every country, you clicked on, it would pop up and, things would whatever. And I kind of explained what PowerPoint could do. And they said, oh, well, I think we really want something even more involved. And I said, okay, well, then you have to go to online or, some other sort of thing. And they went to a different company. Then they called me a couple months later and said, it's a mess. It's too much. It's too expensive. It's too involved. We want to go back to you and go back to PowerPoint. So that's what we.
So do you find a lot of that for your agency?
Yeah, we've seen a huge growth in it in the last 12, 18 months. People are leaning more towards building out a 300-slide presentation that only 20 slides will get shown at a time.
So is that a sales presentation?
Yeah, it's a lot in sales. It's more when you've got multi-users. And so rather than develop a template that people have to build their own content in, the direction and aim is create something that has all of the content that is authorized to be used, and then create interactions, menus, and things like that so you can navigate to that live.
I actually did that, I think it was almost 5 years ago, for a medical company.
Lots of it.
The marketing VP, he understood it. He said, geez, I want my salespeople to do that because they were meeting with surgeons. Those people don't have time on their hands. And because of that, and I learned it from some other people in the medical world afterwards, they took up so many parts of the market because they were so darn efficient when they were meeting the surgeons. Mm. And I learned even recently that they still have that presentation and they click through it because they know they can get the information about the stents that they're working on.
So when you build those types of presentations with bits that you want to drill down to, mm-hmm. you can use buttons and all kinds of things. I wonder how many people or how much is the use of Zoom?
At the time, Zoom did not exist. Yeah, so it was really, really all manual. Yeah.
So there's hyperlinks to certain areas that will come back out at the end of the slideshow.
Mm-hmm.
There are custom shows. So what do people use Zoom and what is the point of it?
I start to use Zoom so much because it cuts down my design time.
So
big
we
time.
Use Zoom a lot. So, well, I'll answer this one. We use Zoom a lot, but I actually turn the Zoom feature off. So the whole morph, zoom in, animation transition, I let it use the standard transition. But I use it because it builds custom shows much more quickly.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
So, Tom, I think to your point, I probably needed to get an understanding of what interactive means. So for a sales presentation that's a 300 deck, and it may be that the presenter needs, there's a 40-minute talk, a 20-minute talk, and a 10-minute talk, all within the same presentation. It's just a custom set of slides. Or it could be interdepartmental. This department slides are slides 90 to 120 in this department. So we do lots of them in that thing. I was actually thinking more using PowerPoint as a replacement to application design, which we do a fair amount of as well. So yeah, the interactivity of it, I think Zoom has brought it back to light, but we've been building it like that for a decade.
I mean, it's been used in prototyping for a long time. There's a lot of UI courses and UX courses that actually encourage using PowerPoint as a prototype tool. Yeah,
oh,
it's really nice to see it start to come back as a simple, easy to use functional tool.
But then everybody quickly discovers the limitations of it. Like, oh, I can't do a back and a back. You know, you can't do two chains of back as you can in HTML because it's a simple coding.
Yeah.
Here, where PowerPoint is more of a hard-coded solution, you don't get to expand it. Okay, well, we've got to actually wrap this one up. We've hit our time limit here. I'd like to say thank you because we have other things to do. We're in San Diego at the Presentation Summit, and we are all going to disperse and head out to meet with other peoples. Yeah, this is kickoff day. So thank you everybody for actually being here early ahead of the actual Presentation Summit opening, sharing a little bit of international flavor. It is also unique. I wanted to call this together just because it's hard to get all of us in the same room. It'd be hard to get us all on the same phone. What time is it at home?
It's about lunchtime tomorrow.
It's 10:30 in the morning.
10:30 in the morning. And Chantel, you're a little bit different.
8:30.
8:30 p.m. Yeah. And we're going into pre-dinner, I guess you'd say here. So
yeah, it's 5:30.
Time zones
right
would make this conversation very difficult. So thank you everybody for joining us.
Thank you so much.
And it's worth flying over just to meet people in person. You learn so much. You know, we might be on a phone hookup, but my goodness, we learn.
I say the same thing because I get to hang out with you. And we're going to have notes throughout the week. It's very great.
So if you're listening internationally, you have lots of fellow international folks who use funky sized paper. So come next year.
Next time, come over and see what an A4 page is.
All right. Well, that was awesome. But let's do some pro and tech tips now. And of course, I'm going to start us off and not do a presentation related tech tip. So a while ago, Troy, you were reading in Wired magazine and you came across this website called Zola.com and you recommended it. It is a website for weddings, and I just have to say it is amazing. Kelly is doing all of the planning through it, from registry to seating charts, which is what we're doing right now. And it's just a well thought out, very convenient thing, something I'd highly recommend.
How do you spell that?
Zola.com.
Got it.
Yep.
So my pro and tech tip is a bit of a warning. I have previously talked about Duet, the app that makes an iPad a second monitor, a wired second monitor. It's phenomenal. I use it when I'm traveling. Well, recently I updated, the app popped up. I have an update and I said, sure, no problem at all. Duet worked great. I still had an extended desktop, but suddenly I had no Adobe apps, Photoshop, Illustrator, Premiere. None of them would open. I mean, they wouldn't even launch. I did a lot of troubleshooting. It turned out to be a driver conflict with Duet. Basic huge arg that was horrendous. So I had to uninstall Duet and now everything in Adobe works again, but I've uninstalled Duet, installed the older version. I still have the same problem. So it's updated some drivers. There's no going backwards. So as a note or a warning, Duet version 1.5.3.3. So 1.5.3.3 on Windows 10 and Adobe Cloud, huge issues. I've already notified the Duet guys and they said, oh, we're going to look into this, but
So, you know, in order to use Adobe, which is kind of critical to work, I had to get rid of my cool travel companion, and I was just struggling all of last week working on my small little monitor. So there's my, it's a tech tip. It's a tech tip of a warning. Nolan, what do you got?
I've got Mike Parkinson's Build a Graphic add-in for PowerPoint on the PC only at this point. So Mike Parkinson's a fellow PowerPoint MVP. He has been creating graphics for presentations and otherwise for years. And now he's created this graphic that allows anybody to call upon a massive catalog of pre-made vector graphics, not images, but vector graphics that you can pull right into PowerPoint and you can insert them. You never have to leave PowerPoint. So you can call upon and insert these vector graphics to create infographics, to just, create better visual slides. And the way it works is it works on a few levels. You can just search the catalog for, see what's there and put it in yourself, but it will also examine your content and it will recommend graphics. So for example, if you have a slide that talks about assembly lines and factories, it will recommend graphics from the catalog that are assembly lines and factories. And then you can just place them in, and since they're vector, you can recolor them, you can break them apart, you can edit them. And it does a number of different things. It will also examine your content and if you have bullet points, you can have it chunk them out into individual boxes, something we've talked about before. So you don't have to use SmartArt or, remake them. It'll do that for you. And you can do that in conjunction with, you can chunk things out and then insert the recommended graphics. It's a subscription model, $99 a year. That'll allow you to always have the latest catalog because Mike will keep adding to it during the year. So you'll always have the most up-to-date graphics, and it's really powerful and really cool. And I there's nothing out there quite like it, as far as I know.
Yeah, very well thought out.
Yeah. So Lori and I were recently in Washington, D.C., and we got the opportunity to go see the Parkinsons. So Mike, while we were at
like a sitcom.
It was. Yeah, we were at the Meet the Parkinsons. Their house is just like a sitcom. It is phenomenal. Mike gave us a tour because I hadn't actually seen it. So he gave us the tour. The whole ability to take a bullet list and chunk it. I mean, that's what we do manually every single project. Like, we do not want bullets. We got to figure out how many visual containers we need. That tool does that part automatically. I thought that was really cool. The graphics were really cool. And the one thing I got out of it, which you may not take note of right away, is it's your login. So you can use it on any computer. It doesn't lock the subscription to a computer as well. So for $99, it's a deal. It's a vast library. And in addition, I'll just tout the fact that I received a hand signed copy of his new book as well. It was very cool.
He does have another book as well.
He does. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So with that, I'm going to hit stop recording finally. We'd say we're done.
For episode show notes, links, and more from this episode, visit us at our website, www.thepresentationpodcast.com. The Presentation Podcast is produced by TLC Creative Services, Inc. You can contact us with episode suggestions, questions for our hosts, or comments through our website. Subscribe at the iTunes Store or at our website for additional options. If you like the podcast, rate us on iTunes. Stars and reviews are greatly appreciated. Look for new episodes the first and third Tuesday of each month.